All right, everybody, welcome to BO Boys for Tuesday, March 26th. Fuck it, it's a raw feed. We're doing it live. I'm Clayton. I think Pat's alive.
I am Pat, and I am alive. But listen, I was in Vegas, baby, Vegas, this whole weekend. It was a bachelor party situation, not the Tom Hanks variety, which I think did well at the box office, but not one of Tom Hanks's bigger hits. But I was drinking. I was gambling. We can't really get into it on this feed. I think we have to save the gritty details of my Vegas trip for the Kirk exclusive on the Kirk Minahan YouTube network. So we will get to that. And Clayton, I'll just tell you one thing about Vegas this weekend. I met a woman, and we're going to get into it on the other show, but it's some wild details. So, you know, you got to listen, you got to watch the BO Boys Kirk exclusive on YouTube to catch all those. But there's a little tease. I went to Vegas and I met a woman, and me and you are going to get into that later. But before that, on this show, I think we got to plow, and you know, we're not talking about the snow variety, which I know a lot about after this weekend in Vegas, but I think it's time you plow for this box office weekend of Friday, March 22nd.
Number one, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire made $45 million in its opening frame. Number two, Dune Part Two made $17.6 million, down only 38%. It hemorrhaged theaters. It lost 410. It's at $233.3 million in its fourth weekend. Number three, Kung Fu Panda 4 made $16.5 million, down 45%. It lost 262 theaters. It's at $132.9 million in its third weekend. Number four, a newbie, Immaculate, $5.3 million in its first frame. Number five, Arthur the King made $4.2 million, down 44%. No theater change. It's at $14.5 million in its second weekend. And I'm just going to go to six real quick here. Another newbie, a horror movie from IFC Films, Late Night with the Devil, made $2.8 million in only 1,000 screens. It is, I mean, listen, that's something.
That is something, Clayton. Let's actually talk about that to start. Had you heard about this Late Night with the Devil going into this weekend? What was your awareness of this Late Night with the Devil?
I saw the first trailer for it, and I saw the second trailer for it.
Okay, and, great.
I follow this gentleman's career, and I'm not going to try to say his name, but he's a guy who's been in Marvel movies as like a secondary character. He was in the Suicide Squad. And
May I try and say his name?
You can.
I'm looking at it. And again, remember, I was in Vegas all weekend, so it's tough to say any name, but I will say star of Late Night with the Devil. His name is, I think, David Dasmalchian.
Okay.
He was in the Dracula on a Boat movie over the summer, right? Was he not on the last Voyage of the Demeter? I'm pretty sure he was in that.
Pat, you know what? We'll never know.
There's no way to tell. No one will know. Yeah, there's no way.
But I'll tell you why I follow this gentleman's career, Pat, because I did a series of Wendy's commercials with this gentleman when he first started out. I was an extra, and he did some Wendy's commercials, and I was way, way in the background. And this gentleman had aspirations to be a serious actor, and guess what? He did it.
Wow. And did you have such aspirations at that point in time, or were you just in it for the,
for the lost buck?
You're just trying to make a buck. So acting, winning acting awards, working in the soot mine, to you, it all would have been the same result.
And so, you know, we all end up as dust.
I mean, some of us end up as soot, which is good for your business. Mm-hmm. So David Dasmalchian, he's a star of this movie. I gotta say, I'm gonna throw this out here because this movie overperformed. I mean, this was, you know, $2.8 million for an IFC Films midnight release. That is, you know, we're not in summer of 2020 when IFC Films midnight ruled the roost. This is modern times, and IFC Films is not necessarily a juggernaut anymore.
Well, you know what this says to me, Pat? New variant dropping soon.
Oh, wow. IFC Films is the harbinger of pandemic. Yeah, that's possible. I hope that's not the case. Here's what I hope is the case, Clayton. Here's what I hope is back. Are younger people wistful for late night? Are they wistful for the days, you know, that we were raised in, the you know, the late night wars, the late shift? Are they wistful for the days when it wasn't just the mayonnaise men, when these late night hosts actually mattered? Could that be a thing that went on this weekend with this late night with the devil?
It's such an older version of that. That uh-huh. I don't think that played much into it, I'll be honest with you. If okay. this would have been late or early 90s Carson, you know, or early 90s Letterman,
right,
then I
right.
would say, oh, there's a hunger here. But this seems so old fashioned for young people to even have any concept of.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I don't think they're watching the Dick Cavett show on YouTube.
Right,
so I just
right.
think this is more of a, I think this is more of a interesting found footage situation. It had a lot of buzz. I mean, this is impressive for this movie. Now we'll see if it holds or does anything after this, or the hardcores have been satiated. But yeah, I mean, this is impressive. I mean, we were calling Love Lies Bleeding to take this number five spot, which didn't happen, Arthur the King, and then it didn't even take the number six spot because this devil comes in and just steals its thunder.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right, because the depiction of a late night in this movie seems more of like a Joe Franklin show mm-hmm. than it does a Letterman. It's not like the devil is doing any jaywalking in this, any Iron J, any, you know, stupid human tricks, anything like
dancing
that.
Dancing Itos.
There are, yeah, there's, I don't think there's any possessed dancing Itos in Late Night with the Devil. I though haven't seen the film, so I'm not sure if mm-hmm. that happens.
I myself have not seen the film either.
It's going to be on Shudder pretty soon. That is what I'm seeing. But hopefully it does get a couple of weeks of racking up some money at the box office. And I don't know. I mean, I love to see this turn into a franchise, you know, like you have the VHS franchise, which continues into different eras with the VHS sequels. So give us a late night with the devil that gets us into the Letterman Leno, you know, 90s wars. Let's get that, you know, let's get this devil hiding in a closet, taking notes while the executives talk about replacing him with David Letterman. I would love personally to see that that Late Night with the Devil sequel. All right, so that's Late Night with the Devil. Clayton, what's a movie that you want to get into before we get into Frozen Empire? Anything else in this top 10 list that strikes your fancy here?
I mean, I think we do have to mention Immaculate. That's yes, a movie yes. that, you know, Sydney Sweeney. Now, this is a movie that supposedly was a passion project for her. She's a producer on it. Five mil. That was what was expected. You know, I know we both went a little bit high. I went seven. What did you end up going with? Okay, now I can't hear you.
So I said this would be 10 million. I thought it would be double what it did. I think it just comes down to, it's a neon release and they didn't promote this thing at all. I mean, do you think that this same movie with a bigger distributor does any better, or is it just that this is what this movie was always destined to do?
Oh, I mean, I think if you have muscle behind this thing, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you put some muscle behind one of the emerging, you know, stars here, yeah, you definitely get something here. And I've heard it's, I mean, it's not terrible. And she's getting good notes for her acting in this. But I also think there's a level of, this devil movie sort of also came in and took some of that thunder. Because if this was the only horror movie for the Gore Hounds coming out, maybe it does overperform. But you see that Devil made $2 million, you know, that money could have gone to Immaculate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I really think, yeah, that probably does play into it. It doesn't help that the Gore Hounds had another choice, but I really think it comes down to you just didn't see big promotion for Immaculate anywhere. This was all on the back of Sydney Sweeney letting her fans know that this existed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because this did less than a Night Swim, but something like Night Swim got so much promotion that they pushed it to $10 million plus just because people knew it was coming out. Even though I think if they both got the same promotion, Immaculate would have done much better.
And Blumhouse has a cachet to it. It's like A24. Now, A24, they do have movies that underperform, obviously. But you're just going to have more people going for the label when it comes to a Blumhouse or an A24 than they're going to go for a Neon. Neon just doesn't have that identity of they always have great shit.
Right. Especially with horror. You know, I could be wrong, but I can't think of horror breakouts from Neon. You know, they were the studio behind Parasite and behind some other sort of art house dramatic hits. But they're not known for horror the way that Blumhouse, obviously, or even A24 are known for.
Mm-hmm.
As we're seeing, IFC Midnight. I think this $5 million that she pushed it to with her own social media is a small win for her. And it seems like the budget for this was pretty low. Everything I'm seeing says that the budget for Immaculate was under $10 million.
Yeah. I mean, it'll like everything, it'll eventually make money. But we talk about box office here, so that's what's important. It's one of those wait and see, what does it do next weekend? I mean, does this just drop straight off the map?
Right. It's got a the first Omen coming out in a few weeks.
April 5th, I believe.
Yeah, so that'll end up sucking up all the possession oxygen in a few weeks. So it's basically got, you know, this coming weekend, which I think is Easter weekend. I know you're a big time churchgoer. Is Easter coming up this weekend?
That's a great question. I actually am a lapsed Catholic, so I don't know. I know it's early this year, so it is either this coming weekend or next weekend.
Okay. Yeah,
it can't be WrestleMania weekend. There's no way they put Easter on WrestleMania weekend. That would be ridiculous. So it has to be this weekend.
It would be a disaster for Easter if it has to go up against The Rock and Cody Rhodes. Yeah.
Easter Bunny gets body slammed.
Yes, 100%. So, yeah, I mean, I thought this would do a little more, but there just wasn't the awareness of Immaculate to get it to a mainstream audience. But you know what did get to a mainstream audience, Clayton? Do you want to talk about the number one film of the weekend, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
And Pat, can I say I nailed this? Or is it close enough to what I said that it would be the same exact amount? I mean, it's not the same exact amount, but it is roughly, you know, provided a bump in ticket price. This is the same people who saw the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, which... I mean, it does show, you know, that the Ghostbusters Afterlife came out in what? The fall of 2021, right? That was, you know, October, November 21. So it does show that those people, for the most part, have survived the last 2 years. Because it's the exact same people that came again. Although, we went to see it opening weekend, and we didn't go this weekend. So we must have been replaced by somebody. You know, opening weekend, me and you were both there 2 years ago. So two people did replace us. Two younger people did step up and replace us. And we didn't die, but we just didn't go.
I mean, this movie, higher budget.
Yeah.
Sony's usually pretty good with budgets. I do think that if they continue this franchise, which they probably will, depending on how well this holds and what it can do down the stretch. Because I mean, I do think the collab is going to really eat into this, because I also think this is not a beloved movie. I don't think people enjoyed this movie. So the hardcores went the first weekend, as we can see.
Right, right.
I do think it's not going to make as much as Afterlife, definitely. But keep churning out these sequels until the audience dies or the Ghostbusters die. And keep the budgets low. Do not go higher. I would say cut the budget for the next one.
Well, in order to cut the budget for the next one, are you cutting out a star of the original movies? You know,
no, you kill Finn Wolfhard. No, you kill Finn Wolfhard. You give the little girl 5 minutes on screen.
Okay,
and then you just have these old farts running around shooting lasers, which is what the fans want. Which, not judging, just facts. Not judging, just facts.
So you're saying a third Ghostbusters movie in this cycle should be old farts and not new heart throbs. You think they should go Aykroyd, Murray, more screen time, kill off Finn Wolfhard, and don't bring Finn Wolfhard back as a ghost. Like, kill him off, cut his head off. He's not a ghost.
Well, I guess maybe that's against this sort of, they wouldn't kill him. He went to college and he's not answering his phone. Right.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
You do that sort of stuff. It's like they grew out of it and these old farts didn't. And that's the story. I mean, I think that's the thing, is you cut these young people loose, and obviously their salaries are not going to be what the oldster salaries are, but if it's a third
Aykroyd's
movie,
the one eating up all the budget.
If there's a third movie, then these actors are going to expect a bump.
And you just
cut them loose. You just don't give it to them. McKenna Grace, cut her loose, you know, or like I said, very, very short screen time. And you know, Paul Rudd, I think, is the one you want to bring back. Maybe give him some points. Who knows?
Yeah.
But Carrie Coon, this budget low.
You bring Carrie Coon back?
Well, if her kids aren't there, then we don't need Carrie Coon. So cut her loose, too.
Wow. So you're doing, this movie opened higher than the last one, but you're talking full house cleaning of the Ghostbusters cast.
Because that is what they want. That the fans want that. Give them that. And keep the budget low. If you're Sony, that's what's smart. Because you're going to get a third movie, probably, of this trilogy. Past that, audience dead. Murray may be dead. Aykroyd may be dead. Ernie Hudson probably will outlive everybody there.
Yeah, but he's looking great. Yeah.
He's looking great. So, but that would be what I would say here.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the film. I've read some spoilers of things they're setting up for the future. And this is not a spoiler of anything that happens in the movie, but there apparently is a setup for a future movie that would involve the tiny Stay Puft Marshmallow Men that we saw in Afterlife. That apparently they're teased in a heavy way. So do you think you do a third movie with just the tiny Stay Puft Marshmallow Men, and that would really cut the budget?
Well, the buzz is that they're trying to make them into Minions. You know, this is like the live action. I guess they're not. I mean, they're animated, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Minion situation. Yeah, I mean they're free, other than the VFX artist that you chain to a desk and make these things.
Right.
I do think, cut everybody loose, have Paul Rudd be the star with the oldsters showing up, and put these Marshmallow Men in instead of the kids.
Wow. Well, I mean, here's a rumor that I've heard that I think this would be a blowing up of the budget. Do you think there's any chance another Ghostbusters movie, the gimmick is this current crop of Ghostbusters meets the Ghostbusters from Answer the Call, from 2016 Answer the Call? Is that at all a possibility here? I mean, then you're going nuts with the budget because you're bringing back Wig, McCarthy, post Barbie McKinnon. You know, Leslie Jones has got to delay shooting Supermarket Sweep for a week. So you're throwing the budget out of whack if you do that. But it's a possibility.
Well, I think you're trolling here because there was on Deadline, one of the top articles was Ernie Hudson talking about the 2016 Ghostbusters Answer the Call. And they tried to trap him into saying something. You know, they always try to trap these people into saying something bad about this movie to start this brouhaha over again.
Right, right.
And I think they're steering clear of it because so many people have said it just creates this sort of conversation that everybody's sick of. I don't see Kristen Wiig doing it. I don't see McCarthy doing it. I don't see anybody doing it because they got a lot of crap unfairly for it. I mean, right, the facts are that they were trying to reboot Ghostbusters for years and years and years.
Years and
they were trying to do it with every single crop of comedians that came out during those years. So they were going to do it with the frat pack, you know, the Vince Vaughns and the Ben Stillers and the Owen Wilsons. They were going to try to do that. Right. They were going to try to do it with the Apatow crew.
Yes.
You know, your Seth Rogans and your Jonah Hills and Dave Franco probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not Dave Franco. He wasn't part of that.
I think he would have played a janitor that said, you know, Ghost is that way, dude. He might have gotten a spot there. Yeah.
So
Craig Robinson would have been in that version.
I was just gonna that was the name I was Craig trying Robinson. To bring back from the depths of my memory.
Yeah.
This just so happened in 2016 to be the people, right?
Yeah.
McCarthy was big at the time.
Yep.
You had SNL was popping and Leslie Jones was popping, and so was Kate McKinnon. And of course Kristen Wiig.
Yep.
It had a big hit with Bridesmaid, and this was going to be her follow-up, her comedy big follow-up to it.
Yeah.
All of the ingredients were there. And guess what? It opened to 46, and it did good business. It just wasn't a gigantic Melissa McCarthy or Bridesmaid size hit. So that was the problem.
And the budget on that was out of control. The budget was gigantic. That was the budget of a it needed to do Marvel numbers to be a success.
Yeah. So the thing with that is that it's looked at as this abject failure, and it's not. It was a movie that did okay when it should have done, or they expected it to do, spectacular. So to answer your question, there's no way any of them go anywhere near anything resembling a jumpsuit or a proton pack ever again.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that would be trying to supercharge this franchise.
I don't think that supercharges it. I just don't think the people who go see these movies want to see these old farts.
Yeah,
they want to see the old farts in the suits, because we've talked about this at BOHQ. Ghostbusters isn't a thing other than these characters. The thing that makes Ghostbusters what it is the personalities. It was wrapped around comedic personalities.
Right.
Comedic personalities, right? And that's what people have proven that they want. They want these comedic personalities in these jumpsuits with the Prodan pack. They want Bill Murray phoning it in. That's what they want. And anything else, they don't want a different character they don't want a Kate McKinnon different Ghostbusters character. They don't want a Leslie Jones different character. They don't really want McKenna Grace or Finn Wolfhard. I think the only reason these people went to Afterlife is because they were expecting, okay, we're going to get the oldsters to come in and save this at some point.
Right.
That's why they went, because it was being teased that these guys were going to be there. And that's why they went.
Right, right. Yeah, it's the Star Wars thing. It's the studios thinking that Star Wars as a brand is what's meaningful, and in the end, it's just those three actors from the 70s in those three parts, and that's all people care about. And the helmet, and you know, the Darth Vader helmet, obviously. You know, if you have him walking around in that helmet, you could put me or you in there, and it would be acceptable.
How do you know I haven't been in it?
You may have. I mean, listen, you may have went straight from that Wendy's commercial with David and Dalsamari and straight to being Darth Vader. I don't know your whole life. We met later in life. So you're right. You may have been Darth Vader. I got to say, this movie did a little better than I thought. I said low 40s, and I did think there was a chance this was going to bottom out. So that's a big thing here is, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire absolutely was a movie that at different points seemed like, man, this could open in the 30s and totally bottom out. And that did not happen. So Sony's got to breathe a sigh of relief, I guess, that this potential disaster ended up doing exactly what all the other movies have done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they are lucky. I'm having a hard time talking about this film, honestly.
Okay.
Because it's so uninspiring, and it's not the future of theaters and cinema. This feels like a last gasp dying of the last era, the Marvelization of everything, where in the Star Wars, like you were saying, the sort of let's put new people in, but no one's going to care, and then just bring back Luke and blah, blah, blah.
That feels
very old, what used to be. You know,
okay.
I'm looking at the top of the charts, and you're seeing Dune 2, and that's what's exciting.
Yes.
That this movie having a great hold still, and that new generation of stars where they're probably going to be able to do different sorts of movies that aren't franchise movies. They're going to be able to be lawyers, and they're going to be able to be different sort of characters. This Ghostbusters sequel just feels old already, but I'll tell you what, it's a Band-Aid for theaters. It's not saving theaters, but it's a Band-Aid for theaters, which you need Band-Aids once in a while. Band-Aids are good. I'm not going to say that everything has to be a sign of great vitality and health. This is a Band-Aid.
Yes. And sometimes you just want to stop up a gaping wound. And that's what Frozen Empire did.
And it speaks to the power of the theater going experience, that this sort of heartless mercenary project made $45 million.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we talk about this as a heartless mercenary project, and it is, but I'm going to say congrats to someone who I think for this person, this
Don't
is their passion. I am going to congratulate Dan Aykroyd. I'm going to say congratulations to Dan Aykroyd. Who did you not want me to congratulate?
I thought you were going to. I also
want to congratulate, and you'll join with me on this, is congratulate Patton Oswalt for being in the number one.
No, not Patton Oswalt. That's not who I was going to say. I was going to say the director of the last movie and the producer and the writer of this movie.
Jason Reitman. Okay. Well, listen, I want to get back to congratulating Dan Aykroyd because I do think for him, this is not a mercenary act. This is his, aside from selling vodka, I think selling vodka is number one for Aykroyd. And I think number two is continuing the Ghostbusters franchise. And I'm sure right now he's typing away on a spinoff for these mini Stay Puft Marshmallow Men. And he's genuinely excited about it, you know? Yeah. And so good for Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. I mean, that good for Dan Aykroyd, I would say.
Good for Dan Aykroyd. So you would say good for Dan Aykroyd. You would say good for Patton Oswalt.
I would never say that. I read a review immediately, and I'm not a critic, that was reiterating how likable Patton Oswalt is. And I wanted to, I've never responded. I don't respond to things online. I don't send letters. I don't email. I wanted to understand this person's mentality. In what world is Patton Oswalt likable? A likable presence. You know, right, like, right. That is my question here, is that how is he likable? You could say he's funny if that's your opinion. You could say he's interesting to look at. You could say that. Likable is probably on the low, low end of what I would say Patton Oswalt is.
But to be fair, we have not seen this film. So perhaps you would go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and you would walk away and you'd say, Patton Oswalt was very likable in that. I get it now.
There is a 0.0 chance of that happening.
Wow. 0.0. That's very low. That's very, very low.
It's as low as Paul you can Rudd, go.
It's as low as you can go. Yes. Paul Rudd, you know, we talked about it last week at the preview, how coming off of Quantumania, the movie that basically set off a chain reaction that destroyed superhero movies, Paul Rudd was unscathed coming out of Quantumania, and now he's back, number one movie in America. I think no matter what people think of this movie, I'm sure they love him in it. To me, he was the highlight of the trailers. You know, he delivered that line of "Bustin' makes me feel good." He said it in a certain Paul Rudd way that I was like, you know what, that's great. He's just one of those stars that I think is just always going to be around because people are always going to like him, and he's always going to be in enough successful stuff to keep it going. So he could do, you know, hopefully he uses this cachet to get another David Wayne film off the ground soon. That's what I'm hoping comes out of this.
Me too. Me too. I mean, that's a likable guy. That's a likable guy. Yeah. I mean,
more likable than Patton Oswalt, you think?
Oh God, there we go. This is going to become a thing. You know, Quantumania is the Thanos of MCU movies. It snapped its finger and killed everything.
Right.
So I do think, this is, and we talked about this earlier. I mean, this is such a great rebound for him. All is forgiven, I believe. And I'm looking forward to seeing him in different franchises and maybe smaller movies going forward. But he seems to be a guy who's always going to have a career.
Yeah. Great for Paul Rudd. So we'll follow this in the weeks to come. We both think next week Godzilla X Kong, the collab, is going to be direct competition for Ghostbusters. So it may be a bloodbath for Ghostbusters next weekend, but it opened.
That's big.
Clayton, I want to throw something out at you before we go, which is a what if. I want to throw a what if at you. And it's about a movie that we both saw this weekend. So the Doug Liman directed Jake Gyllenhaal, Conor McGregor star, Roadhouse remake, dropped on, and we're not the Streamo Boys, huh? But I bring this up because it has a box office backstory, dropped on Amazon Prime over the weekend, remake of the Swayze classic. And there was a big controversy a couple of months ago because the director, Doug Liman, furious that Amazon wasn't putting this in the theaters. He thought he directed it to be in the theaters. They got Jeff Bezos on a boat, ambushed him with the film, tried to convince him, put this in the theaters. It didn't happen. It dropped on streaming. And there was the big to-do, and we had this as well, of put it in the theater. Why not put it in the theater? We've both seen this film now. We both watched it. Do you think... I won't say do you think this should have been in the theaters, because in the end, we think everything should go in the movie theaters. But had that happened and it been released theatrically, what do you think Roadhouse 2024 does at the box office? Does this have any chance of being a beekeeper, let's say? Is it that level of action movie? What do you think Roadhouse 2024 could have done theatrically?
No, I mean... this thing cries macho.
Wow.
Doug Liman saying he thinks it's the best thing he's ever done is a lie and pure fabrication. He was trying
to get
into theaters.
And he doesn't even know it. He's money and he doesn't even know it.
He was trying to get into theaters because he wanted it in theaters, as he should. Right. And he used a lot of... He said a lot of things that he really shouldn't have, because you can't take back these things. Tom Cruise saying that The Flash is one of the best movies he's ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, that hurts his credibility. That hurts his credibility. And Doug Liman's credibility has been hurt because this is a gentleman who's made great movies. I mean, Live, Die, Repeat.
Yes.
One of my all-time favorite movies. A great, fun action movie that looked amazing.
This movie
looked terrible. It was boring. The performances were across the board terrible. I think this movie would have ate shit at the theater. And it should have. It should have ate shit. I mean, I don't see a world where this thing is a hit in theaters. Because Jake Gyllenhaal is not a butts in the seats movie star. And I would argue that he's a deterrent.
Yeah, I agree at this point. I think he plays a great creep. You know, he plays a great boring creep, but boring creep usually is not a movie star box office persona.
No.
And he plays a boring creep as the lead in Roadhouse, which is, I haven't seen Roadhouse in a few years. I don't think that's the way Swayze played it in the original as
he's
boring
a fighter.
Creep.
He's a philosopher, poet, tough guy. Right. One of the best action movie performances ever.
Right.
Best
that's how
soft,
we played it.
Sensitive, tough guy performances ever by a true one of a kind star. And then you got Jake Gyllenhaal, who can't find a place to call home. Is he an art house draw? No. Is he a butts in the seat movie star? No. Is he an action star? No. What is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah. He's Maggie's brother right now.
Director Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Right. Yeah. This would have eaten shit 100%. You had seen it first, told me it was terrible. I held my doubts, you know, because I know how much you love the original. I watched this last night, you know, it was my Vegas come down, and it is so terrible. It is one of the most boring action movies, and it's got all the CGI nonsense that would have looked so bad on a big screen. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't notice how bad it was, you know, quite how bad it was on my regular TV screen, but on a movie theater screen that would have looked awful. And we don't think Conor McGregor is going to be a movie star coming out of this.
No, his performance, and I know some people are saying they liked it because it was unhinged.
It's unhinged. He starts off naked. He ends naked. Yeah.
But it's not fun. That's not fun. He comes off as a, I don't want to say what I was going to say because
he's an imposing
gentleman.
Right. And he's possibly a listener, you know, now that he's in the movie business, I'm sure he is listening to, you know, the BO boy. So
yeah.
So he was great in this film. Conor McGregor was great in this.
Greatest performance ever put on film.
Yes. Yes. Hi, Conor. Great job. We love you. Come on the show remotely. Mm-hmm. So Roadhouse would have bombed, but Conor McGregor, I think, really showed himself to be a true actor with this performance.
And I think everybody knows where we're going to go with this and why this casting was terrible. And I mean, when you have someone like Logan Paul right there,
sitting right there,
to play the lead in Roadhouse, and you take Jake Gyllenhaal,
right?
I'll say it here,
right?
Logan Paul, you launch him as an action star in Roadhouse.
Yep.
You show his cocky side, his sensitive side, his fighting abilities, which he genuinely has.
Yes.
As opposed to Jake Gyllenhaal, who probably did a few boxing lessons and then said, I'm good.
Right.
Special effects will take care of the rest.
Right.
You put that guy with his muscle, his social media muscle, his WWE superstardom, his sports drink, right?
Yes, he's in his prime.
Mm-hmm. You talk about Dune buckets, right? You make a special Roadhouse Prime flavor, and it's only available at a Roadhouse screening, this thing would make Bafa Bobo.
Yeah, 100%.
How high would this would be the number one movie in America this week, because you're getting the Roadhouse special prime. It tastes like it tastes like a what is that?
It tastes like Terry Funk's boot from the first movie.
Well, I was gonna say what's the Shirley? It tastes like a Shirley Temple or something. You know, like a non-alcoholic. Okay. Oh, so for because it's a because you know the it's a Roadhouse, so there's booze, but you want the kids to come, you want the kids to come.
yeah
but that's my take on this, is that miscast up and down the board. You got Logan Paul just sitting there. Somebody's gonna take this idea and run with it.
Yeah, 100%. And this was, remember, originally this remake was supposed to be Ronda Rousey as the Jake Gyllenhaal part, as Dalton. Mm-hmm.
As Dalton's daughter, I think.
Yes, yes. And then her stardom waned quickly. You know, she reached her height beating up Turtle in the Entourage movie and then never burned brighter after that.
But I'll tell you what, not now. Not now, of course. But if that Ronda Rousey version had come out, it would have done better in the theaters than this movie would have if you put it in theaters.
Oh, yes. Her at her peak is a bigger star than Jake Gyllenhaal has ever been, for sure. But yeah, that's our box office what if for this week. What if Roadhouse had opened in theaters, and we both agree it would have cried macho.
Cried macho.
So
if it was lucky.
If it was lucky, yes. So, Clayton, I think that's it for this episode. You know, we're gonna get over to the Kirk exclusive on the Kirk Minahan YouTube network to talk about my Vegas trip. And again, I met a lady in Vegas, so we'll talk about that. But I think we've done it for this week on the main feed episode. So email us, theboboyspodcast@gmail.com. We've got a lot of great emails. I think we'll get to that on our weekend preview episode coming up later this week. Email us there, boboyspodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at the BO Boys Pod on Twitter, X, and TikTok. WannaBO senior intern Christopher is killing it with the clips over there. Of course, WannaBO junior intern Jack has brought the Substack back. He's just writing up a storm over there. Great job, Jack. I don't supervise you. Christopher does. So great job, Christopher, on supervising Jack to write the Substack articles. Give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Watch us on our YouTube channel. All of these episodes also air as videos on the BO Boys YouTube channel. Of course, our weekly Kirk exclusive episodes, episode 3 coming up this week on the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel. Live shows. We got the LA live show date set for Tuesday, October 8th, Boston and New York dates to come. And anything else on your end, Clayton? I mean, I think we've done it.
Oh, there's nothing left to say.
No, nothing.
Except for, until next time, we'll smell you at the bar.